Welcome, everybody, to today's very special and timely teleconference. How should your estate planning practice, regardless of its size, react and adapt to the coronavirus crisis facing all of us today? This is Phil Kavish. Many of you are familiar with me as the principal of Ultimate Estate Planner, where we help provide education and training for other estate planning attorneys. I'm also principal of the law firm of Kavish, Minor, and Otis, located in Torrance, California, with offices throughout Southern California. And by way of background, also a state bar certified specialist in estate planning. We're thrilled to have on today's teleconference a special guest speaker by the name of Jim Cunningham. Jim is the CEO and principal of Cunningham Legal, which is headquartered in Auburn, California, with offices throughout both Northern and Southern California. And like me, Jim is also a State Bar Certified Specialist in Estate Planning and a colleague over the years, and I can attest to the fact that Jim is a fantastic innovator in running and marketing an estate planning practice. So welcome to our call today, Jim.
Thanks for having me, Phil.
Before we begin, I'm going to quickly go through the agenda of items that we're going to cover so that you know if you don't hear something immediately that we're going to get to it. First of all, we're going to talk about, in general, the crisis, but then get into more detail, such as the need for regular communication with your prospects and your clients and how you may do that. Then more specific marketing techniques to your existing clients and prospects. After that, we will talk about how to handle client meetings, whether virtual or face-to-face, and also maybe more importantly, how to handle document signings. Also, how to deal with staff issues during this crisis, which are likely to abound, and also how to handle your expenses so that you can maximize your net cash flow in the short term period of the crisis. So here, let's begin with some general comments. Obviously, on a conference like this, we'll be talking about specific business measures, but we want to keep in our minds and hearts as our top priority the fact that the health of ourselves, our compatriots at work, our loved ones, and our community at large is clearly our top priority. And we keep that in mind throughout our call here today. The first thing that we want to address is the importance of more regular communication with your clients and prospects during this period. So, for example, maybe you only issue emails infrequently or newsletters infrequently or call clients infrequently. During this crisis period, it's even more important to stay in touch with your clients and handhold them through this crisis. A few things here I want to touch on, then I'll open up to you, Jim, to comment. Some things that we're doing here in our law firm, it is currently Thursday, but last Friday and again on Monday, we sent out emails to our clients and to many of our prospective clients on our email list, addressing the stock market decline. We actually even had a guest who's a specialist in that area. Also talked about some estate planning issues, particularly, of course, health document related issues and transition in case of disability issues. And we issued those emails out to our clients last Friday and again on Monday. Since then, we've also had a touch with them by email on the specific coronavirus precautions that our firm is holding. And we're even going to speed up our normal monthly newsletter, e-newsletter, instead of waiting until the 1st of April, we intend to issue that either tomorrow or on Monday, where we're going to talk in more detail about how we can work remotely with our clients, and also with links to our virtual seminars, which we'll talk a little bit about later. So at this start here, I think the important point is that we want to be in contact with our clients and prospects, even before we're talking necessarily about marketing anything to them. In the short term here, Jim, do you have any comments on these types of staying in touch communication?
Yeah, you know, one of the things that we've been talking about internally, and when I say internally, I'm at home and my three adult children are home with my wife and I. We're kind of hunkered down. One of the things that we're trying to figure out is how to best, when you do reach out and communicate with your clients, how to best do it. And, you know, there's so much news out there about what's going on the health wise. I think you mindfulness about your messaging is really important. And so you can certainly take the tack of, you know, we're going to talk about how we're addressing the disease and what's going on. And some people might feel more comfortable not talking about that, but they might be talking about the importance of family and the people that you love. And it's a slightly different way of talking about it. But whatever, I would just encourage anyone who's listening to this, how you talk about how you communicate with your client in the near future, it's really important to have some mindfulness and some intentionality about it and feel comfortable with what you're talking about. Again, some people are comfortable talking about the disease. Other people are going to be more comfortable talking about family. So
I agree. And you know, we tried to stay away from the negatives about the coronavirus or any kind of implication that, you know, people are nearing their demise. We certainly don't want to bring those issues too much up. I think people already realize that. And we really, Jim, emphasize more peace of mind of knowing that things are in order and that your loved ones and you will be properly taken care of should something happen. So it was really, I agree, much more positive an approach than I've seen some others do. I also want to comment on a couple of things here. Because someone said to me the other day, well, Phil, you or in this case, Jim, may have extensive email lists, and you can very quickly contact your clients in this manner efficiently. But what if I don't have a good database or I don't have a bunch of emails? What should I do? I would recommend that you may want to make some personal calls, either you or your staff, just to reassure people that you're still there, you're able to help them, that you're concerned for their health and welfare, and just something to touch base with them. And even if this means going through some of your files and pulling out email or phone contact information, this in a weird way might be a good time to get your database in order. Because you really should have. The other thing that Jim, I know you did a great job of, because I just was looking on your website before we got on here, is that you've really made the response to the coronavirus the primary item on your initial webpage, which I think is really smart when people are moving there, as they often do if they get your name or they see even your marketing.
Yeah, you know, so, I'll tell you, Phil, and something that's going on, I liken to what's happening to, it's most like a war in terms of its social context and how do you put this into your brain and how does this all work. So I think this is up there with like 9/11. It's, I think, maybe a little bit different than the downturn in 08. That was a more purely economic event. But this is on the top of everyone's mind because, frankly, at least in where I live in Northern California, we just got an order from Sacramento County to shelter in place, and that's the order. So everyone's at home. I mean, unless you're going to the store or the, you know, or the pharmacy, you're at home.
That's right. And in a lot of places, and I think even the president has said, if you're over 65, you shouldn't be leaving your house. Well, that's a high percentage of our clients or prospective clients right there. So the next thing that I want to talk about here, address, is how to market to your existing clients, because one of the things that some of you know, I'm a big proponent of bringing in your clients for reviews. There's no reason why you can't continue to contact clients either by phone or just by messaging in your emails or otherwise, that they might want to contact you for a checkup meeting, a free review of their plan. Interesting enough, I don't know what you've found so far, Jim, but we're having a lot of clients calling in who we've even met with before or reviewed before, and now finally they've decided, oh, you know, I need to get that thing changed or I need to get that thing added to my plan.
The flood's coming. It's time to buy flood insurance, but yeah. I get it.
Exactly. And the reason why I say this is because sometimes, we're going to talk about other marketing too, sometimes when times are tough, people stop marketing, and that's actually the most important time. I mean, if, you know, you're tossed into a lifeboat on a rough sea and, you know, water's coming in, the first thing you don't throw out is the life preservers. And here, generating cash flow in the short term for a lot of people is critical. This might be a great time to call people to come in or hold a virtual meeting. We'll talk about that in a minute. Actually, let me now turn back to you, Jim. Let's talk about how you are handling meetings now during this crisis.
Yeah, so it's taken us – we started – working on this project about a week ago, and honestly, a week ago seems like a year ago. It's just been there's been a lot coming at us. There's been a lot coming at everyone. So one of our number one concern is the health of our workers and then also the health of our clients. And one thing to be mindful of is that if a person comes into contact who has been diagnosed with COVID-19, that person goes into quarantine. And so if you're working in a building and someone is diagnosed with COVID-19 inside of your building, that's an issue, and it's a disclosure requirement under California labor law. You have to disclose that, maintaining HIPAA confidentiality, but you have to disclose that to your employees that it's happened. So what we've done is we've made kind of ripped the Band-Aid off and made the decision not to have in-person meetings unless the lawyer and the client are okay with it. So I'm still a free country. If the lawyer and the client want to meet, provided that you can meet in the county that you're in, because what we're seeing are county-by-county mandates to shelter in place. But what we're doing is we're doing those on the Zoom platform. Now, you've seen that in the news, Zoom. We've been using Zoom internally with our offices throughout California for about the last 2 years. I will tell you, it is comically cheap. It is ridiculously cheap for the value that it delivers. There also is a HIPAA-compliant version, and this is very important. We've had a couple of clients ask us, is your video conferencing HIPAA-compliant? There's an extra layer of security. I know if you buy the business platform of Zoom that you can get the HIPAA add-on, and I don't think they even charged us more for it. It was just kind of included. It's something you just have to ask for. So we're doing the conferences by phone, by Zoom, and then the signings. What we're doing is we are mailing the document predated to the client. Well, first we're mailing a draft to the client and go over the draft with them. Then we're mailing the documents that are predated, and we are setting a signing meeting with the paralegal or attorney, depending on, you know, availability and what the client wants. Sometimes they don't want to talk to the lawyer. They'd rather talk to one of our great paralegals. But we're sending the documents out predated with an appointment to sign. So imagine this, the client is sitting at home on the phone or on video conference. The staff member now is at home on their voice over internet protocol, that's V as in Victor, OIP, the VoIP phone. And we use a remote, we don't have servers in our office, they're all offsite. I think they're in Las Vegas. I mean, I don't even know where they are, but they're offsite. So everyone's accessing the information remotely in a secure environment. They're having a phone conversation with the client, and the client will sign all the documents. Now, the client is not notarizing the documents, and here's the problem with sending a notary out to someone's house. Bill, you mentioned this. Most of our clients are over 65, and many of our clients have compromised immune systems. And what I've read is if you are over 65 and you have a compromised immune system, your mortality is about 50%. This is a very dangerous disease for all human beings. No human is immune from it. And so when you look at who we serve, that slice of the demographic, at least in our firm, those people, we don't want to put them at risk, right? So we're going to sign the document. The client will sign it remotely. They will keep the documents. Once this all passes, and it may be April, it could be July, it could be next February, we don't know when it's going to pass, the clients will come back into the office, and then we'll finish acknowledging the documents before a notary public. We're also doing a declaration where the attorney signs under penalty of perjury that they've met with the client, and all these things happened, you know, what I just talked about, all these things happen. Because the real issue, you know, when you go to, you know, if there's a conflict down the road or you need to prove this up, if somebody passes away before certain documents are acknowledged before a notary public, you may need a court order to validate what's happened. We want as much evidence as possible because the issue is, you know, is this what the person really wanted? And I got to tell you, I think it's inconceivable that in September, let's say this thing passes by September, if we have some clients sign some documents in March and they pass away in March, it's almost inconceivable to me that a court would overturn those documents or somehow not ratify or validate them if you have a bunch of evidence that says, listen, we could not send somebody out to the client's house because we didn't want to put them at risk. And the plan was to come in and acknowledge it later. That's the best thing that we've come up with. And Phil, I mean, we talked about this yesterday. I don't know if it's going to work, but I don't really know what other option there is. You cannot do in California a remote notary, meaning the notary has to be physically present when the person acknowledges the documents. And we think that's put too many of our clients at risk.
Well, you've brought up a lot of issues here, Jim, so let me unpack them in my comments. First of all, holding meetings virtually, great idea. Through the different kinds of platforms that are available. Could even be just FaceTime on someone's phone. That is a great thing because most people either are on lockdown where they're not allowed to leave for non-essential items like shelter-in-place rules that you're dealing with. And by the way, in California, the shelter-in-place rules, which I anticipate are going to spread to a lot of other places, they do not consider estate planning legal services as an essential service. So it's not an exception. And so you almost have to go virtual now just to be prepared for worst case scenario. That's what we're doing. By Monday of next week, just in a few days, we're going to be completely virtual at that time. And here I want to deal with something that can come up, especially if you're doing review meetings with your clients. If you're not currently scanning into your database and have access over the internet to your client documents, maybe your notes or phone notes or other things in your file, once you're forced to now practice outside your office at home, it could be difficult if you don't have those files. And so one of the things that I'm making a recommendation, because we're kind of caught a little bit in that. We've been scanning our files as people have come back in over the years, but we still probably have a good quarter of our clients' files that are not scanned in. So this goes back to my recommendation that you start contacting clients about reviews, because if you have them on the calendar, you then can pull those specific files and move them to the appropriate place off-site so that you'll be able to conduct the meeting. Very, very important. Now, as far as the signing meetings, I think Jim has unlocked the most troublesome issue here. And let me comment on that, is that some documents in some states, whether it's your trust, your power of attorney, your healthcare directive, your HIPAA authorization, whatever it is, most documents do not require notarization to be immediately effective or completely legal, however you want to say that. But some do. And we do have this issue that you're probably not going to be able to get remote notaries, even if they wanted to, if you're in a shelter in place situation, they will not be able to go to people's houses, let alone those people, you know, allow them to come in. So I do agree with you, Jim, that I think the best course of action is having the client sign it, creating a special affidavit or declaration of the attorney as to why this was done without notarization under the circumstances. And in my opinion, in the worst case scenario, should that client pass before the crisis does, that you will most likely be able to go into court and have the court confirm the validity of the documents. I know in most probate courts rules, they do have the ability of a court to judge the validity of a document. And I've got to believe that given the crisis, doing something as much as you can is better than doing nothing. And the reason that I wanted to talk a little bit more about the signing is that this is critical because if people are calling you or you're contacting people and they say, great, I want to get this done now, and then you have to say, well, you know, I won't be able to sign you until the crisis is over, that's just not going to work. So we have to figure out an intervening or intermediate step that we think can work the best, like you've said, Jim. Now, I want to switch gears to marketing. Jim, did you want to add to that?
No, I mean, all I'm saying is I have no idea if this is going to work, but I, you know, we've been noodling on this thing for a week, me and the other lawyers in the firm, and this is kind of the best thing that we've come up with. So it's not like it's, I mean, I'm just being brutally honest. I have no idea if it's the right thing to do, and it seems like it is, but again, this is something you're just going to have to figure out for yourself.
Well, one thing I would add, you and I talked about, is we're not going to allow the documents to just go to the client for signing. If the preceding meetings were virtual and you're not there for a signing, you always have the exposure to a potential issue about capacity or undue influence. And so if we look at anything that doesn't pass our, you know, or something doesn't pass our antenna or our smell test, such as somebody's being cut out or a share is being radically adjusted, we are probably not going to send those documents. So I want to be clear to everyone listening that there are going to be exceptions where you're just not going to do this.
Yeah, so I'm really glad you mentioned that because this is just sort of a best practices. And again, I think the world is different now than it was last week. Going forward, if somebody wants to disinherit a kid, I don't think we would be handling that on a virtual basis and mailing the documents.
Definitely not.
Going to do it. Make it go, have it go to the intestate heirs, or consistent with prior plans. So.
Exactly. I think where you're going to see the most changes is trustee succession. That's what we're experiencing so far. And the other thing that may happen, and this one could be a difficult one in terms of sending it to the client, is where the client either wants to bring up some of their successor trustees as a current co-trustee or wants to step down, resign, and now turn it over to the successor. You kind of have to play those by ear on a case-by-case basis.
Yeah, in that instance, it may be that I guess banks are still essential businesses, so they would take whatever documents to the bank and have them notarized at the bank, I guess. I mean, I'm just...
If they're willing to go out, yeah. And a lot of our banks I'm seeing starting to shutter down where they're doing, you know, electronic banking, but they're not keeping their lobby open. They have their ATM, but not their lobby open. So I kind of surmise that that's going to become more of a problem over time. The next thing I wanted to address with you, Jim, is marketing to your prospects so that you can hopefully bring in new client work during this period. Even if you can't finish it during this period, at least get an engagement, get a retainer, and have some cash flow coming in. This is going to be a major issue for many of our practices. And Jim, I'll share here some of the things that we're doing, and I think you are probably doing most or all these things, and you probably have comments. One is that most people know that our firm does a lot of seminars. I'm a big proponent of seminars. Jim does as well in his practice. And one of the things that I've done is I've now discontinued live in-person seminars to seminars we're going to hold over the web, you know, such as on Zoom. We are going to be using some special Facebook marketing as well as our targeted email list and our newsletter list to try to drive people to these seminars. They will probably be shorter than our usual seminar. And here, they're going to be also recorded so that people who may have expressed an interest in, or couldn't attend would be able to do that. And of course, using Zoom, you can have their login information, their individual email address, maybe other information, so that you would be able to continue to follow up with them as a prospect. The biggest difficulty, I think, and this is something that Jim, you'll probably want to address with me, is the issue of actually closing the seminar and getting people to make appointments, because very clearly when you have an in-person seminar, you have a much greater opportunity to do that. Maybe you can address some of these things I've touched on, Jim.
Yeah, so we have done a lot of live seminars. We've been to your the boot camp, and that's taken a lot of lawyers to your boot camp. I've been kind of a frequent flyer there. We've done a lot of in-person seminars where we use the mailers, and we've also done a lot of seminars, live seminars, where we've used social media and specifically Facebook. And one of the things that we found is your show rate. So if someone says, yes, I'd like to attend, the show rate at a live event, which is not what you're talking about now, Phil, but I'm just going to kind of walk you through this. The show rate is lower and the conversion rate is lower. So, you know, typically you'll have 80%, you know, if 100 people reserve for a seminar, 80 will show up. And then, 80% of those people make an appointment, and then 65% of those, or 80% of those people show up, and then 65% of those people become paying customers. And so, you know, those are tend to be higher retention rates or conversion rates. What we found with Facebook in particular, and as that particular online platform, we found that the potential clients are not as far along on the customer journey as the people who respond to the printed materials and attend the live event. So, and it may be the nature of Facebook where it just randomly sort of appears on your feed, although there are ways you get more granular. That's different than like an organic Google search or an SEO or an SEM. So SEO is the organic Google search. So when you go onto Google, not the stuff across the top of the bar and not the stuff on the right hand side, but the sort of middle stuff, that's the organic search. Search engine marketing is the pay per click and ads, and that's typically on the top of the search result. And over on the right hand side of the search result, we find a much higher conversion rate when people come in through Google, because they are going onto the search bar and clicking in, you know, Living Trust Torrance, and then Phil, they'd see your firm and then click it and then call and say, yeah, I'm ready to buy. So Facebook has been really a great a value to a lot of other lawyers I've talked to. I would just say if you're going to be doing Facebook seminars, it's better to be the most specific and the most granular you can be. And so one of the things we've found is if we target, you know, parents with children who have special needs, that's going to be a higher response rate than just sort of blanket, you know, estate planning for everyone. We also use HubSpot, and HubSpot is kind of a creepy tool. If you send an email out and the recipient clicks through the email, you know how long they spend on your website, you know what they're looking at, and that's all using cookies. And then that's reported. So using HubSpot, we can see if people respond to a Facebook ad and click through to our website, we know how long they're on our website, we know what they're looking at, and we can use that information. So the more engagement they have, the more likely they are to become a client. And that's a really powerful tool. I love the idea of recording your content. I mean, that's the one thing that always kind of bummed me out. I know, Phil, your story about your 20 years of being on TV, you were unable to repurpose that content. That was a lesson learned for me. Anytime I do content, I ask the person who's helping me, who owns this content? Do I own it or do you own it? But the great thing with recording them is you can repurpose that content. You know, you can cut it up into little bits. If you do a 20 or 40 minute webinar, you can cut that up into, you know, a 3 minute segment that you could push out onto social media, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok maybe, but those are my thoughts on that.
You know, adding a couple things here. The difficulty at the close of the seminar to book appointments. Now, we are testing this for the first time, Jim, this Saturday, but what we're looking to do is, as we normally do, we're going to offer a discounted fee if they come in and do their plan by a certain date, and offer them a free consultation, but we're going to use the words, if you qualify, and we're going to explain that you will be contacted after this presentation if you indicate an interest, because we have a way that they can do that through a response to us. And then at that point in time, our triage person can decide, okay, do we want them to come straight in? Or are they far enough along the path like you're saying, Jim? Or is it someone who really would benefit from coming to our full seminar at a later time and there's not an immediate urgency, maybe we're going to direct them that way, and then from there they're going to pre-qualify themselves into a meeting. One other thing that I wanted to mention here is that, without sounding morbid, of course, there is opportunity and potential growth on the administration side, whether it's probate or trust administration. And I would tell you that just coincidentally, having nothing to do with the coronavirus crisis, we began a short time ago doing Google ads specific to probate and trust administration. And we're already finding that to be very, very effective. That may be something that you want to add to your marketing out there for prospects. Now, the next agenda item, Jim, I'd like to address is, you know, handling all the different kinds of staff issues that will come up during this crisis. Maybe you want to relate what things you've done with your staff in terms of discussing either their job security or getting them prepared to work remotely or any other issue that you've addressed with them.
Yeah, so you know, we're in California, which is kind of the People's Republic of California. You have to be very careful what you say to your employees, because the vast majority of employees and the employees in our firm are at-will employees. And so what that means is you know, if you say, hey, I'm keeping you guys on through this whole economic crisis, well, that might be now a binding agreement where you have to keep them and they're no longer an at-will employee. So mindfulness about that, talk to your labor law attorney, you know, do your due diligence and your research on that. What we did is
I agree with you, Jim. By the way, when I talked with my employees as soon as this crisis happened, I wanted them to at least have a sense of calm, but I said to them, look, we all know that this crisis is day-to-day. It's changed dramatically in very short bursts. And what our intention is, what we're going to try our best to do, is to keep everyone aboard at the compensation you are now, but we can't make any promises because we don't know where things are headed. But that is what our intention is. We're going to make our best efforts to do. So they understand it's not a promise, but also they get some sense of peace, because this is the number one issue that they're going through. They're seeing a lot of their friends being laid off with no money coming in, which is a very scary thing, especially for our staff as opposed to our attorneys. They really are scared about that. So that was the approach I did, Jim.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great approach. It's heartfelt. It's sincere. It's real. Here's the other thing I learned this morning. A pretty big firm in Sacramento, I believe it was yesterday, laid off their entire support staff many attorneys and sent all the attorneys home. And this is a pretty big law firm in Sacramento.
Wow.
I don't even know what to think about that, but to not be prepared, I think it was kind of dumb luck on our part. I got to tell you, it was kind of fortuitous because we had multiple locations and we were kind of forced to use a cloud-based platform and the VoIP phones and all of these new technological things. And for us, we just kind of lucked into, oh, we can just, you know, unplug everything and put it in your home. I was talking to our accounting department before we started today, and she says, man, you're not going to believe it. We're really busy. Like, I don't know where this is coming from. But here's what's happening. I think a lot of firms are like that firm I mentioned in Sacramento. They are closing shop. They are packing it up, and they're going to go hibernate for 6 weeks, and they're going to come back at the end of 6 weeks or however long this takes. So I think for practitioners out there, you know, who are listening to this, you need to know that there are a lot of people who are closing their doors. And I also think that there are a lot of lawyers, you know, in our area of practice, it's a lot of lawyers over the age of 65. I mean, it just is. If I were 65 or over, I would really question whether I wanted to keep working or not. Because if this thing isn't going to be resolved for 18 months, and we are not going to have a vaccine until the spring of 2021. And that's just a scientific fact. And you can politicize it and you can talk about it all you want. But the fact is, we are not going to have a vaccine that's proven to work for 18 months. If I were 65 or had a compromised immune system, I don't know that I would continue practicing law. And it might be time to just, you know, close up shop. So I think there's two things. One is lack of preparedness, and also lawyers will likely be exiting the practice of law. I think it presents a reduced capacity to handle estate planning matters and trust administration matters. So that means that there's more work for the people that remain open. So I would encourage you, remain open. Don't just close up shop and, lay off all your employees. I mean, you might have to do that. I don't know. I mean, you've got to find that out for yourself, and you've got to really have, again, a lot of mindfulness about that. But also by being able to stay open, I think when we get through this, I think if the people who weather the storm are going to be that much stronger.
That is so true, and I can tell you a lot of different stories over the years where it was the Iraq War, where people wouldn't come out of their houses, and everybody was glued to CNN, and we had no people or money coming in, and over the years I've gone through two or three stock market crashes. Definitely the key thing is to stick it out. And one of the things we're going to get to in a minute is how to control your expenses during this period so that you can stick it out. But I want to comment on a few things that Jim just said. One is that certainly this may be a time that if you do have a mature practice, you may want to decide where am I headed with this practice. But one of the things I would implore you to do, I'm going to be talking about, cutting a lot of your overhead, at least on a temporary basis. I would do that before I would let any kind of a skilled person go. Perhaps a receptionist you could replace, and even there you may have a very skilled person. The reality is that if you let people go, even if you try to bring them back later, they're not going to trust you anymore. They're not going to feel safe with you anymore. And Jim and I both know, having run firms for a long time, if you lose somebody who's skilled, just having to find, but more importantly, ramp up and train that person to get them to the same place can just be so unsettling to your practice that I really recommend that you try to keep people. One of the things that I plan to do, Jim, is that, first off, I want to look at this new legislation that was passed by Congress in terms of helping people who may be out of work because of the virus. I'm not sure that will cover people that you just lay off who do not have exposure to someone who has the virus or has it themselves. But I want to look at those items, of course. But the other thing I'm looking at is push comes to shove, worst case scenario, let's say, Jim, this goes 4, 5, 6 months out, I may at some point ask people to reduce their salaries or defer salary for a period of time. And that is something that I've already sort of floated by some of my employees, and they're very in tune with that. So I would much rather do that than lose key people, for sure.
Yes. Phil, that, you raise a really good point, and I read a great article many years ago. In 2008, there was a company in New York City who had to cut its payroll, I don't know, like 80% or 70% or something like that. And so instead of just random, you know, instead of picking people to let them go, they actually asked their employees who would like to take a year off or 6 months off or whatever it was, and then who would like to job share. And this is a larger company, more people, but they kind of figured it out. The employees figured it out amongst themselves. That's one approach. The other thing to be mindful of in California is if you reduce hours by 10 to 60%, right? So if you reduce an employee's hours by 10 to 60%, they do get an unemployment benefit through the EDD. Now, it doesn't match their salary, but it is a benefit. So, you know, if you have six employees, instead of laying off three, you might consider reducing, you know, the time that a few people work. And again, kind of coupled with asking them, because some people might say, you know, I'm fine working 4 hours a day because I got to homeschool my kids now because they can't go back to school. You know, I guess now what I've heard is it's through the remainder of the school year that they're not going to be going back. So, you know, they're not going back to school until August or September.
Yeah, that's very true. Another item here with staff in terms of preparing them to work remotely that I think is important to bring up is if you're going to give any staff or attorneys access to your database to get in there, access possibly to your email list, you may want to have limitations on who can do that and have, of course, adequate security so that you can't get hacked into through their remote location. And I will tell you that, unfortunately, I've had this situation once happen in my firm where an employee who shouldn't have had access to our email list did, and they were able to then transfer it to a competitor when they left. So these are things, little details that are really important. Your IT person examine this before you have people working remotely.
Phil, isn't that not only is it probably a crime, but isn't it completely unethical to solicit representation from a represented party? I mean,
sure it is, but unfortunately, unfortunately, once the genie is out of the bottle, it's hard to put the genie back in. Oh, I was able, in that case, I got a consent decree for them to stop their actions and return the database and swear up and down they weren't going to use it anymore, but there was damage already done that really couldn't ever be corrected, because establishing what your damages are in monetary terms of something like that is very difficult. And by the way, on that issue, we have our employees always when they start sign a confidentiality agreement, and they periodically we have them re-sign it so that it can't be claimed that it was years ago, I forgot about it, where it really is very clear that they are not allowed to use our database, our client files, and so on in certain ways. And I will tell you that even though you can't typically prohibit an associate from leaving you and practicing law and going after your clients, that with that agreement, I was in California able to stop someone from at least marketing to my existing client base or my existing email base. So that goes a long way to protecting you as well. Well, I want to steer back onto our core topic, and the last thing that I've got here to discuss is really critical. It's how to be able to have enough cash flow during this crisis period. And we already talked about some potential marketing things you could do, but now I want to talk, instead of the income side, the expense side. And some things that I want to mention here, and then, Jim, I'll have you come on in, is first of all, so that you can maintain the proper level of revenue, if you're having virtual meetings, you can still do virtual engagement letters, such as through DocuSign or other means. And the other key thing is the ability to take the credit card over the phone. This is a big one that a lot of people do take credit cards, but they don't have the capability to take it over the phone and then submit that credit card. So make sure that you have that. Another thing, and this is probably the most key one, is to buy some time to seek some accommodations from creditors, third parties who are on your payee list. So here you may need to contact your landlord about perhaps, for example, I did this in the Iraq crisis, going back to that one. I went to the landlord and I said, look, I think this is going to last for 3 months. Would you give me a deferral of the 3 months? And then what we'll do is we'll amortize it and add it to the next 9 months. So over the course of the year, you still get the same amount of rent, and they agreed even without an interest component to it. Also, not just your landlord, but other leases, car lease, equipment lease, phone leases, and of course, any loans that you have, or even payment of credit card bills. These are all areas where you can often get extensions or deferrals of payment. And I want to tell you something. You need to be persistent. I'll give you an example. I have a very small loan that we took out a while ago with American Express Merchant Financing. And, of course, you know, immediately as soon as I saw this coming, I tried to get them on the phone to do an accommodation, a deferral. Well, needless to say, they probably got a million phone calls. And literally, I called them 6 times, each call being over 20 minutes. But eventually, today, they got their act in order. They got their systems up and their staffing up. And I was able to immediately defer the payments on that loan in a way that's going to work really well cash flow-wise. So I would say to you, just keep calling. If you need to put them on the speakerphone and while you're working and doing something else, this is really important to contact a lot of your vendors, your potential creditors, to see what you can do. And then the other thing is this is an opportune period in a way because this gives you and your staff the ability to finish backlogged work or what I call sometimes clearing the bubble. So that at the end of this or even possibly during the crisis, you can get paid for completion of work projects. And we were already seeing that, for example, in estate administration where in the past, you know, it has a lifespan that is really long in terms of gathering information and getting things done. And we've really amped up our efforts to gather information from the clients and third parties, and we're moving out those cases a lot more quickly and getting paid. So there are things you can do. Look at your back burner list of things that you never get to. Maybe now's your opportunity. Jim, you want to add anything here?
Yeah, I actually was on a video conference webinar with some well-known economists, and they said something that you need to know your banker. And you mentioned, you know, having to call a number and kind of go through this is the horse has already left the barn on this one for probably a lot of you. But for those of you who actually do know your banker, and what I mean by that is, you know, you're at a business bank, and many of these are smaller business banks. And there typically is, you know, some type of senior vice president role attached to your relationship. It's really good to know your banker. So what we're doing right now is today we submitted a loan package to the SBA to refinance our we've taken on some debt by acquiring practices, and we're looking at refinancing that debt. And I think it's like I want to say 3.75% for 30 years. So normally these are 10-year loans. The government is handing you money. If you can borrow money for 30 years at 3.75%, that is basically free money because you're deducting the interest. And when you factor in inflation, and one of the things that I've been reading is this narrative that we may be headed toward inflationary times or stagflation. So that's, we're at risk for that. So we could have inflation on the horizon. So you want to borrow as much as you can at the lowest rate you can. On your rent, so in Sacramento, we mentioned today, Sacramento said, no, you know, everyone stay at home. That's the force majeure clause. And I don't know if you remember that from contracts in law school, but basically, if something bad really happens and it frustrates the purpose of the contract, you are not obligated for, you know, at least a period of time under the contract. So I would say for most of us, if you can't go to your office because the government says don't, there's no rent due. I mean, that's basic kind of contract law. I'm not giving you legal advice, but it's something you want to take a look at. And it may be in other instances, what ends up happening is the length of the term of the lease is extended. So let's say you're locked out until May 31st, right? So there would be no rent until May 31st, and then those months would be tacked on to the end of the lease. The other thing I would remind you is the most important thing right now to do for business owners is to make payroll. Because certainly in California, again, we're in the People's Republic of California, if you don't pay people when you're supposed to, that's a big no-no, a lot of penalties. It's really a bad idea. But also, these are people, and these are, you know, people that you spend more time with the people you work with in many instances than you do your own family. And these are people who are really in need. And this affects everyone on the planet. So this is unlike anything that we've experienced in our lifetimes. I mean, this goes back to like the Spanish influenza in 1918 and 1919. This is a really, really big deal, and we need to take care of each other, and we need to take care of the people that we work with. And if it means, you know, kind of gutting it out, I would just say if you're going to, the most important bills to pay are going to be the payroll, because you have to pay it, right? If you don't pay your rent, guess what? Your landlord, they're not going to evict you. You know why? Because we could end up with who knows what the unemployment rate's going to be. They want to keep their tenants. So lawyers and other professionals, financial advisors, CPAs, those are really good tenants for commercial property owners, and they want to keep you. They don't want to lose you.
You're absolutely right, Jim. Well, hopefully the things we've gone over in this call can help you develop a definite plan of action. And I stress, as many of these items we've talked about, if you could put them in a checklist form, a priority list, it's really going to help you to stay focused so that you and your staff and your clients and the community can be less fearful, and you will be able to make confident decisions moving forward and be a leader to lead others in these difficult times. So thank you very much, Jim Cunningham, for joining us today. And we at Ultimate Estate Planner hope that this call will help you unlock your practice's potential. Thank you, everybody. Bye-bye.
Hello?